with you, Kelsier, as they end up slitting their wrists, hitting themselves in the face, and then drowning themselves to forget the experience. Ha! Okay, your turn.
I'm going to murder you,
Kelsier said softly. Wait, what?
If you step inside here, Kelsier said, I'm going to murder you. I'll slice the tendons on your wrists so your hands can't do anything more than batter at me uselessly as I kneel against your throat and slowly crush the life out of you. All while I remove your fingers one by one. I'll finally let you breathe a single, frantic gasp, but at that moment, I'll shove your middle finger between your lips so that you're forced to suck it down as you struggle for air. You'll go out knowing you choked to death on your own rotten flesh.
The drifter gaped at him, mouth working soundlessly. He finally said. I don't think you know how to play this game. Kelsier shrugged. Seriously, Drifter said, you need some help, friend. I know a guy. Tall, bald, wears lots of earrings. Have a chat with him next.
The Drifter cut off mid-sentence and leaped for the prison, kicking off the floating corpse and throwing himself at the light. Kelsier was ready. As Drifter entered the light, Kelsier grabbed the man by one arm and slung him toward the side of the pool. The maneuver worked, and Drifter seemed to be able to touch the walls and floor here in the well. He slammed against the wall, sending waves of light splashing up. As Kelsier tried to punch at Drifter's head while he was stumbling, the man caught himself on the side of the pool and kicked backward, knocking Kelsier's legs out from beneath him. Kelsier splashed in the light, and he tried to burn metals by reflex. Nothing happened, though there was something to the light here. Something familiar. He managed to get to his feet and caught Drifter lunging for the center, the deepest part. Kelsier snatched the man by the arm, swinging him away. Whatever this man wanted, Kelsier's instincts said that he shouldn't be allowed to have it. Beyond that, the well was Kelsier's only asset. If he could hold the man back from what he wanted, subdue him, perhaps it would lead to answers. The Drifter stumbled, then lunged, trying to grab Kelsier. Kelsier in turn pivoted and buried his fist in the man's stomach. The motion gave him a thrill. After sitting for so long, inactive, it was nice to be able to do something. Drifter grunted at the punch.
All right, then,
he muttered. Kelsier brought his fists up, checked his footing, then unleashed a series of quick blows at Drifter's face that should have dazed him. When Kelsier pulled back, not wanting to go too far and hurt the man seriously, he found that Drifter was smiling at him. That didn't seem a good sign. Somehow, Drifter shook off the hits he'd taken. He jumped forward, dodged Kelsier's attempted punch, then ducked and slammed his fist into Kelsier's kidneys. It hurt. Kelsier lacked a body, but apparently his spirit could feel pain. He let out a grunt and brought up his arms to protect his face, stepping backward in the liquid light. The Drifter attacked, relentless, slamming his fists into Kelsier with no care for the damage he might be doing to himself.
Go to the ground, Kelsier's instincts told him.
He dropped one hand and tried to seize Drifter by the arm, planning to send them both down into the light to grapple. Unfortunately, the Drifter was a little too quick. He dodged and kicked Kelsier's legs from beneath him again, then grabbed him by the throat, slamming him repeatedly, brutally, against the bottom of the shallower part of the prison, splashing him in light that was too thin to be water, but suffocating nonetheless. Finally, Drifter hauled him up, limp. The man's eyes were glowing.
That was unpleasant, Drifter said, yet somehow still satisfying. Apparently you already being dead means I can hurt you.
As Kelsier tried to grab his arm, Drifter slammed Kelsier down again, then pulled him back up, stunned.
I'm sorry, survivor, for the rough treatment, Drifter continued, but you are not supposed to be here. You did what I needed you to, but you're a wild card I'd rather not deal with right now.
He paused.
If it's any consolation, you should feel proud. It's been centuries since anyone got the drop on me.
He released Kelsier, letting him slump down and catch himself against the side of the prison, half submerged in the light. he growled, trying to pull himself up after Drifter. Drifter sighed, then proceeded to kick at Kelsier's leg repeatedly, shocking him with the pain of it. He screamed, holding his leg. It should have cracked from the force of those kicks, and though it had not, the pain was overwhelming.
"This is a lesson," Drifter said, though it was difficult to hear the words through the pain. "But not the one you might think it is. You don't have a body, and I don't have the inclination to actually injure your soul. That pain is caused by your mind. It's thinking about what should be happening to you and responding."
He hesitated.
"I'll refrain from making you choke on a chunk of your own flesh."
He walked toward the middle of the pool. Kelsier watched through eyes quivering with pain as Drifter held his hands out to the sides and closed his eyes. He stepped into the center of the pool, the deep portion, and vanished into the light. A moment later, a figure climbed back out of the pool. Yet this time, the person was shadowy, glowing with inner light like someone in the world of the living. This pool had let Drifter transition from the world of the dead to the real world. Kelsier gaped, following Drifter with his eyes as the man strode past the pillars in the room and stopped at the other side. Two tiny sources of metal still glowed fiercely there to Kelsier's eyes. Drifter selected one. It was small, as he could toss it into the air and catch it again. Kelsier could sense the triumph in that motion. Kelsier closed his eyes and concentrated. No pain. His leg wasn't actually hurt. Concentrate. He managed to make some of the pain fade. He sat up in the pool, rippling light coming up to his chest. He breathed in and out, though he didn't need the air. Damn. The first person he'd seen in months had thrashed him, then stolen something from the chamber outside. He didn't know what or why, or even how the Drifter had managed to slip from one world to the next. Kelsier crawled to the center of the pool, lowering himself down into the deep portion. He stood, his legs still aching faintly, and put his hands to the sides. He concentrated, trying to what? Transition? What would that even do to him? He didn't care. He was frustrated and humiliated. He needed to prove to himself that he wasn't incapable. He failed. No amount of concentration, visualization, or straining of muscles made him do what the Drifter had managed. He climbed from the pool, exhausted and chastened, and settled on the side. He didn't notice Fuzz standing there until the god spoke.
"What were you doing?"
Kelsier turned. Fuzz visited infrequently these days, but when he did come, he always did it unannounced. If he spoke, he often only raved like a madman.
"Someone was just here," Kelsier said. "A man with white hair. He somehow used this well to pass from the world of the dead to the world of the living."
"I see," Fuzz said softly. "He dared that, did he? Dangerous, with ruin straining against his bonds. But if anyone were going to try something so foolhardy, it would be Sephandrius."
"He stole something, I think," Kelsier said. "From the other side of the room, a bit of metal."
"Ah," Fuzz said softly. "I had thought that when he rejected the rest of us, he would stop interfering. I should know better than to trust an implication from him. Half the time you can't trust his outright promises."
"Who is he?" Kelsier asked.
"An old friend. And no, before you ask, you can't do as he did and transition between realms. Your ties to the physical realm have been severed. You're a kite with no string connecting it to the ground. You cannot ride the perpendicularity across."
Kelsier sighed. "Then why was he able to come to the world of the dead?"
"It's not the world of the dead. It's the world of the mind. Men, all things, truly, are like a ray of light. The floor is the physical realm, where that light pools. The sun is the spiritual realm, where it begins. This realm, the cognitive realm,
is the space between where that beam stretches. The metaphor barely made any sense to him.
They all know so much, Kelsier thought, and I know so little.
Still, at least Fuzz was sounding better today. Kelsier smiled toward the god, then froze as Fuzz turned his head. Fuzz was missing half his face. The entire left side was just gone. Not wounded, and there was no skeleton. The complete half smoked, trailing wisps of mist. Half his lips remained, and he smiled back at Kelsier as if nothing were wrong.
He stole a bit of my essence, distilled and pure, Fuzz explained. It can invest a human, grant him or her allomancy.
Your face, Fuzz.
A.T. thinks to finish me, Fuzz said. Indeed, his knife was placed long ago. I'm already dead.
He smiled again, a gruesome expression, then vanished. Feeling wrung out, Kelsier slumped alongside the pool, lying on the stones, which actually felt a little like real stone instead of the fluffy softness of everything else made of mist. He hated this feeling of ignorance. Everyone else was in on some grand joke, and he was the butt. Kelsier stared up at the ceiling, bathed in the glow of the shimmering well and its column of light. Eventually, he came to a quiet decision. He would find the answers. In the pits of Hath-Sin, he had awakened to purpose and had determined to destroy the Lord Ruler. Well, he would awaken again. He stood up and stepped into the light, strengthened. The clash of these gods was important, that thing in the well, dangerous. There was more to all of this than he'd ever known, and because of that, he had a reason to live. Perhaps more importantly, he had a reason to stay sane.
2.
Kelsier no longer worried about madness or boredom. Each time he grew weary of his imprisonment, he remembered that feeling, that humiliation, he'd felt at Drifter's hands. Yes, he was trapped in a space only 5 or so feet across, but there was plenty to do. First, he returned to his study of the thing beyond. He forced himself to duck beneath the light to face it and meet its inscrutable gaze. He did it until he didn't flinch when it turned its attention on him. Ruin. A fitting name for that vast sense of erosion, decay, and destruction. He continued to follow the well's pulses. These trips gave him cryptic clues to ruin's motives and plots. He sensed a familiar pattern to the things it changed, for ruin seemed to be doing what Kelsier himself had done, co-opting a religion. Ruin was manipulating the hearts of the people by changing their lore and books. That terrified Kelsier. His purpose expanded as he watched the world through these pulses. He didn't just need to understand. He needed to fight this thing. This horrible force that would end all things, if it could. He struggled, therefore, with a desperation to understand what he saw. Why did ruin transform the old terrace prophecies? What was the Drifter, whom Kelsier spotted in very rare pulses, doing up in the terrace dominance? Who was this mysterious Mistborn to whom Ruin paid so much attention, and was he a threat to Vin? When he rode the pulses, Kelsier watched for, craved, signs of people he knew and loved. Ruin was keenly interested in Vin, and many of his pulses centered on watching her or the man she loved, that Elend Venture. The mounting clues worried Kelsier. Armies around Luthadel, a city still in chaos. And, he hated to confront this one, it looked like the Venture boy was king. When Kelsier realized this, he was so angry he spent days away from the pulses. They'd gone and put a nobleman in charge. Yes, Kelsier had saved this man's life. Against his better judgment, he'd rescued the man that Vin loved. Out of love for her, perhaps a twisted paternal sense of duty. The Venture boy hadn't been too bad compared to the rest of his kind, but to give him the throne? It seemed that even Dox was listening to Venture. Kelsier would have expected Breeze to ride whatever wind came his way, but Doxon? Kelsier fumed, but he could not remain away for long. He hungered for these glimpses of his friends. Though each was only a brief flash, like a single image from eyes blinked open, he clung to them. They were reminders that outside his prison, life continued. Occasionally, he was given a glimpse of someone else. His brother, Marsh. Marsh lived. That was a welcome discovery. Unfortunately, the discovery was tainted, for Marsh was an inquisitor. The two of them had never been what one would call familial. They had taken divergent paths in life, but that wasn't the true source of the distance between them. It wasn't even due to Marsh's stern ways butting against Kelsier's glibness, or Marsh's unspoken jealousy for things Kelsier had. No, the truth was they had been raised knowing that at any point they could be dragged before the Inquisitors and murdered for their half-blooded nature. Each had reacted differently to an entire life spent, essentially, with a death sentence. Marsh, with quiet tension and caution. Kelsier, with aggressive self-confidence to mask his secrets. Both had known a single, inescapable truth. If one brother were caught, it meant the other would be exposed as a half-blood and likely killed as well. Perhaps this situation would have brought other siblings together. Kelsier was ashamed to admit that for him and Marsh, it had been a wedge. Each mention of stay safe or watch yourself had been colored by an undercurrent of don't screw up or you'll get me killed. It had been a vast relief when, after their parents' deaths, the two of them had agreed to give up pretense and enter the underground of Luthadel. At times, Kelsier toyed with fantasies of what might have been. Could he and Marsh have integrated fully, becoming part of noble society? Could he have overcome his loathing for them and their culture? Regardless, he wasn't fond of Marsh. The word fond sounded too much of walks in a park or time spent eating pastries. One was fond of a favorite book. No, Kelsier was not fond of Marsh. But strangely, he still loved him. He was initially happy to find the man alive, but then perhaps death would have been better than what had been done to him. It took Kelsier weeks to figure out the reason Ruin was so interested in Marsh. Ruin could talk to Marsh. Marsh and other inquisitors, judging by the glimpses and the sensation he received of words being sent. How? Why inquisitors? Kelsier found no answers in the visions he saw, though he did witness an important event. The thing called Ruin was growing stronger, and it was stalking Bin and Elend. Kelsier saw it clearly in a trip through the pulses. A vision of the boy, Elend Venture, sleeping in his tent. The power of Ruin coalescing, forming a figure, malevolent and dangerous. It waited there until Bin entered, then tried to stab Elend. As Kelsier lost the pulse, he was left with the image of Vin deflecting the blow and saving Elend. But he was confused. Ruin had waited there specifically until Vin returned. It hadn't actually wanted to hurt Elend. It had just wanted Vin to see him trying. Why? 3. It's a plug, Kelsier said. Fuzz, Preservation, as the god had said he could be called, sat outside the prison. He was still missing half his face, and the rest of him was leaking in larger patches as well. These days, the god spent more time near the well, for which Kelsier was grateful. He had been practicing how to pull information from the creature. Preservation asked. This well, Kelsier said, gesturing around him. It's like a plug. You created a prison for Ruin, but even the most solid of burrows must have an entrance. This is that entrance, sealed with your own power to keep him out, since you two are opposites. That, Preservation said, trailing off. That, Kelsier prompted. That's
utterly wrong.
Damn, Kelsier thought. He'd spent weeks on that theory. He was starting to feel an urgency. The pulses of the well were growing more demanding, and Ruin seemed to be growing increasingly eager in its touch upon the world. Recently, the light of the well had started to act differently, condensing somehow, pulling together. Something was happening.
We are gods, Kelsier, Preservation said with a voice that trailed off, then grew louder, then trailed off again. We permeate everything. The rocks are me. The people are me. And him. All things persist, but decay. Ruin and preservation.
You told me this was your power, Kelsier said, gesturing again at the well, trying to get the god back on topic. That it gathers here.
Yes, and elsewhere, Preservation said. But yes, here. Like dew collects, my power gathers in that spot. It is natural, a cycle. Clouds, rain, river, humidity. You cannot press so much essence into a system without it congealing here and there.
Great. That didn't tell him anything. He pressed further on the topic, but Fuzz grew quiet, so he tried something else. He needed to keep Preservation talking, to prevent the god from slumping into one of his quiet stupors.
Are you afraid? Kelsier asked. If Ruin gets free, are you afraid he will kill you?
Ha! Preservation said. I've told you. He killed me long, long ago.
I find that hard to believe.
Why?
Because I'm sitting here talking to you.
And I'm talking to you. How alive are you?
A good point.
Death for one such as me is not like death for one such as you, Preservation said, staring off again. I was killed long ago, when I made the decision to break our promise. But this power I hold, it persists. And it remembers. It wants to be alive itself. I have died, but some of me remains, enough to know that there were plans.
It was no use trying to pry out what those plans were. He didn't remember whatever this plan was that he'd made.
So it's not a plug, Kelsier said. Then what is it?
Preservation didn't reply. He didn't even seem to hear.
You said to me once before, Kelsier continued, speaking more loudly, that the power exists to be used, that it needs to be used. Why?
Again, no answer. He was going to need to try a different tactic.
I looked at him again. You're opposite.
Preservation stood up straight, turning his haunting, half-finished gaze upon Kelsier. Mentioning Ruin often shocked him out of his stupor.
He is dangerous, Preservation said. Stay away. My power protects you. Do not taunt him.
Why? He's locked up.
Nothing is eternal. Not even time itself, Preservation said. I didn't imprison him so much as delay him.
And the power?
Yes,
Preservation said, nodding.
Yes, what?
Yes, he will use that. I see.
Preservation started as if realizing, or maybe just recalling, something important.
My power created his prison. My power can unlock it. But how would he find someone who would do it? Who would hold the powers of creation, then give them away?
Which we don't want them to do, Kelsier said.
No, it will free him.
And last time? Kelsier asked.
Last time.
Preservation blinked and seemed to come to himself more.
Yes, last time. The Lord Ruler. I made it work last time. I've put her into the spot to do this, but I can't hear her thoughts.
He's been working on her. So mixed up.
Fuzz? Kelsier asked, uncertain.
I must stop her. Someone!
His eyes unfocused. What are you doing?
Hush!
Fuzz said, voice suddenly more commanding.
I'm trying to stop this.
Kelsier looked around, but there was nobody else here.
Who?
Do not assume that the me you see here is the only me, Fuzz said.
I am everywhere. But hush!
Kelsier hushed, in part because he was happy to see such strength from the god after so long motionless. After some time, however, he slumped down.
No use, Fuzz mumbled. His tools are stronger.
So, Kelsier said, testing to see if he'd be hushed again. Last time, Rashik used the power instead of... what? Giving it up?
Buzz nodded. Alendi would have done the right thing as he perceived it. Given the power up. But that would have freed Ruin. Giving the power up is a stand-in for giving the power to him. The powers would interpret that as me releasing him. My power, accepting his touch back into the world directly.
Great, Kelsier said. We need a sacrifice, then. Someone to take up the powers of eternity, then use them for whatever he wants instead of giving them away. Well, that is a sacrifice I'm perfect to make. How do I do it?
Preservation regarded him. The creature's earlier strength was no more. He was fading, losing his human attributes. He didn't blink anymore, for example, and didn't make a pretense of breathing in before speaking. He could be utterly motionless, lifeless as an iron rod.
You, Preservation finally said, using my power. You.
You let the Lord Ruler do it.
He tried to save the world.
As did I.
You tried to rescue a boatload of people from a fire by sinking the boat, then claiming at least they didn't burn to death.
God hesitated.
You're going to punch me again, aren't you?
Can't reach you, Fuzz, Kelsier said. The power. How do I use it?
You can't, Preservation said. That power is part of the prison. This is what you did by merging your soul to the well, Kelsier. You wouldn't be able to hold it anyway. You're not connected enough to me.
Kelsier settled down to think on this, but before he had time to do much, he noticed an oddity. Were those figures in the chamber outside? Yes, they were. Living people marked by their glowing souls. More inquisitors come to drop off a dead body? He hadn't seen any of them for ages. Two people stole into the corridor and approached the well, passing rows of pillars that showed as illusory mist to Kelsier.
They're here, Preservation said.
Who? Kelsier said, squinting. It was difficult to make out details of faces with those souls glowing. Is that? It was Vin.
What?
Preservation said, looking toward Kelsier, noting his shock.
You thought I was waiting here for nothing? It happens today. The Well of Ascension is full. The time has arrived.
The other figure was the boy, Elend Venture. Kelsier was surprised to find he wasn't angry at the sight. Yes, the crew should have known better than to put a nobleman in charge, but that wasn't really Ellen's fault. He'd always been too oblivious to be dangerous. Besides, whatever the faults of his parentage, this Venture boy had stayed with Vin. Kelsier folded his arms, watching Venture kneel beside the pool. If he touches it, I'm going to slap him.
He will not, Preservation said. It's for her. He knows it. I've been preparing her. I tried, at least.
Vin turned and seemed to be looking at God. Yes, she could see him. Was there a way Kelsier could use that? You tried, Kelsier said. Did you explain what she needs to do? Your opposite has been watching her, interacting with her. I've seen him doing it.
He tried to kill Elland.
No, Fuzz said, haunted. He was imitating me. He looked as I do to them and tried to kill the boy. Not because he cares about one death, but because he wanted her to distrust me. To think I am her enemy. But can't she tell the difference? Between his hate and destruction and my peace? I cannot kill. I've never been able to kill.
Talk to her, Kelsier said. Tell her what she needs to do, Fuzz.
Preservation shook his head. I can't get through to her. Can't speak to her. I can hear her mind, Kelsier. His lies are there. She doesn't trust me. She thinks she needs to give it up. I've tried to stop this. I left her clues, and then I tried to make someone else stop her, but I've failed.
Oh, hell, Kelsier thought. Need a plan. Quick. Vin was going to give up the power. Release the thing. Even without Preservation's assertions, Kelsier would have known what Vin would do. She was a better person than he had ever been, and she never had thought she deserved the rewards she was given. She'd take this power, and she'd assume she had to give it up for the greater good. But how to change that? If Preservation couldn't speak to her, then what? Elland stood up and approached Preservation. Yes, the boy could see Preservation, too.
She needs motivation, Kelsier said, an idea clicking in his mind. Ruin had tried to stab Elland to frighten her. It was the right idea. He just hadn't gone far enough.
Stab him, Kelsier said.
What?
Preservation said, aghast. Kelsier pushed out of his prison bonds a few steps, approaching Fuzz, who stood just outside. He strained to the absolute limits of his fetters.
Stab him, Kelsier said. Use that knife at your belt, Fuzz. They can see you, and you can affect their world. Stab Elland Venture. Give her a reason to use the power. She'll want to save him.
I'm Preservation, he said. The knife. I haven't actually drawn it in millennia. You speak of acting like him, as he pretended I would act. It's horrible.
You have to, Kelsier said.
I can't, I...
Fuzz reached to his belt, and his hand shimmered. The knife appeared there. He looked down at it, the blade glistening.
Old friend,
he whispered at it. He looked toward Elland, who nodded. Preservation raised his arm, weapon in hand, then stopped. His half-face was a mask of pain.
No,
he whispered.
I preserve.
He's not going to do it, Kelsier thought, watching Elland talk to Vin, his posture reassuring. He can't do it. Only one option.
Sorry, kid, Kelsier said.
Kelsier grabbed Preservation's shimmering arm and slashed it across the Venture boy's stomach. He felt as if he were stabbing his own flesh, not because of Venture, but because he knew what it would do to Vin. His heart lurched as she rushed to Venture's side, weeping. Well, he'd saved this boy's life once, so this would make them even. Besides, she would rescue him. She'd have to save Elland. She loved him. Kelsier stepped back, returning to his prison proper, leaving an aghast Preservation to stare at his own hand as he stumbled away from the fallen man.
Gut wound, Kelsier whispered. He'll take time to dive in. Grab the power. It's right here. Use it.
She cradled Venture. Kelsier waited, anxious. If she entered the pool, she'd be able to see Kelsier, wouldn't she? She'd become transcendent, like Preservation. Or would she have to use the power first? Would that free Kelsier? He had no answers, only an assurance that whatever happened, he could not let that thing beyond escape. He turned. And was shocked to find it there. He could sense it, pressed against the reality of this world and infinite darkness. Not just the flimsy imitation of Preservation he'd made before, but the entire vast power. It wasn't in any specific space, but at the same time it was pressed up against reality and watching with a keen interest. To his horror, Kelsier saw it change, sending forward spines like the spindly legs of a spider. On their end, dangling like a puppet, was a humanoid figure.
"Bien," it whispered. "Bien."
She looked toward the pool, her posture grieved. Then she left Venture and entered the well, passing Kelsier without seeing him and reaching the deepest point. She sank slowly into the light. At the last moment, she ripped something glowing from her ear and tossed it out. A bit of metal. Her earring? Once she sunk completely, she did not appear on this side. Instead, a storm began. A rising column of light surrounded Kelsier, blocking him from seeing anything but the raw energy. Like a sudden tide, an explosion, an instant sunrise. It was all around him, active, excited.
"You mustn't do it, child," Ruin said through his human-like puppet.
How could it speak with such a soothing voice? He could see the force behind it, the destruction, but the face it put on was so kindly.
"You know what you must do."
"Don't listen to it, Vin!" Kelsier screamed, but his voice was lost in the roar of the power. He shouted and railed as the voice conned Vin, warning her that if she took the power, she'd destroy the world. Kelsier fought through the light, trying to find her, to seize her and explain. He failed. He failed horribly. He couldn't make himself heard, couldn't touch Vin, couldn't do anything. Even his impromptu plan of stabbing Elland proved foolish, for she released the power. Weeping, flayed, ripped open, she did the most selfless thing he had ever seen. And in so doing, she doomed them. The power became a weapon as she released it. It made a spear in the air and it ripped a hole through reality and into the place where Ruin waited. Ruin rushed through that hole to freedom.
4.
Kelsier sat on the lip of the now empty Well of Ascension. The light was gone, and with it his prison. He could leave. He didn't seem to be stretching away and fading. Apparently, being part of Preservation's power for a time had expanded Kelsier's soul, letting him linger. Though honestly, he wished he could vanish at this moment. Vin, glowing and radiant to his eyes, lay beside Elland Venture, clutching him and weeping as his soul pulsed, growing weaker. Kelsier stood up, turning his back toward the sight. For all his cleverness, he'd gone and broken the poor girl's heart.
"I must be the smartest idiot around," Kelsier thought.
"It was going to happen," Preservation said. "I thought, maybe..." From the corner of his eye, Kelsier saw Fuzz approach Vin, then look down at the fallen Venture.
"I can preserve him," Preservation whispered.
Kelsier spun. Preservation started waving at Vin, and she stumbled to her feet. She followed the god a few feet to something Elland had dropped, a fallen nugget of metal. Where had that come from?
The Venture boy was carrying it when he entered, Kelsier thought.
That was the last bit of metal from the other side of the room, the twin of the one the Drifter had stolen. Kelsier approached as Vin took the nugget of metal, so tiny, and approached Elland, then put it into his mouth. She washed it down with a vial of metal. Soul and metal became one. Elland's light strengthened, glowing vibrantly. Kelsier closed his eyes, feeling a thrumming sense of peace.
"That was good work, Fuzz," Kelsier said, opening his eyes and smiling at Preservation as the god stepped over to him.
Vin's posture manifested incredible joy.
"I'm almost ready to think you're a benevolent god."
"Stabbing him was dangerous, painful," Preservation said. "I cannot condone such recklessness, but perhaps it was right, regardless of how I feel."
"Ruin's free," Kelsier said, looking upward. "That thing has escaped."
"Yes. Fortunately, before I died, I put a plan into motion. I can't remember it, but I'm certain that it was brilliant."
You know, I've said something similar myself on occasion, after a night of drinking. Kelsier rubbed his chin. I'm free, too.
Yes.
This is where you joke that you aren't certain which was more dangerous to release, me or the other one.
No, Fuzz said. I know which is more dangerous.
Failing marks for effort there, I'm afraid.
But perhaps,
Preservation said,
perhaps I cannot say which is more annoying.
He smiled. With his face half melted off and his neck starting to go, it was unnerving, like a happy bark from a crippled puppy. Kelsier slapped him on the shoulder.
We'll make a solid crew member out of you yet, Fuzz. For now, I want to get the hell out of this room.
Part 3. Spirit. 1. Kelsier really wanted something to drink.
Wasn't that what you did when you got out of prison? Went drinking, enjoyed your freedom by giving it up to a little booze and a terrible headache? When alive, he'd usually avoided such levity. He liked to control a situation, not let it control him. But he couldn't deny that he thirsted for something to drink, to numb the experience he'd just been through. That seemed terribly unfair. No body, but he could still be thirsty? He climbed from the caverns surrounding the Well of Ascension, passing through misty chambers and tunnels. As before, when he touched something, he was able to see what it looked like in the real world. His footing was firm on the inconstant ground. Though it was somewhat springy, like cloth, it held his weight unless he stamped hard, which would cause his foot to sink in like it was pushing through thick mud. He could even pass through the walls if he tried, but it was harder than it had been during his initial run, when he'd been dying. He emerged from the caverns into the basement of Credic Shaw, the Lord Ruler's palace. It was even easier than usual to get turned about in this place, as everything was misty to his eyes. He touched the things of mist that he passed so he could picture his surroundings better. A vase, a carpet, a door. Kelsier eventually stepped out onto the streets of Luthadel, a free, if dead, man. For a time, he just walked the city, so relieved to be out of that hole that he was able to ignore the sense of dread he felt at Ruin's escape. He must have wandered an entire day that way, sitting on rooftops, strolling past fountains, looking over this city dotted with glowing pieces of metal, like lights hovering in the mists at night. He ended up on top of the city wall, observing the Kolos who had set up camp outside the town, but, somehow, didn't seem to be killing anyone. He needed to see if there was a way to contact his friends. Unfortunately, without the pulses, those had stopped when Ruin escaped, to guide him, he didn't know where to start looking. He'd lost track of Vin and Elland in his excitement at leaving the caverns, but he remembered some of what he'd seen through the pulses. That gave him a few places to search. He ultimately found his crew at Keep Venture. It was the day after the disaster at the Well of Ascension, and they appeared to be holding a funeral. Kelsier strolled through the courtyard, passing among the glowing souls of men, each burning like a limelight. Those he brushed gave him an impression of their appearance. Many he recognized. Ska he'd interacted with, encouraged, uplifted during his final months of life. Others were unfamiliar, a disturbing number of soldiers who had once served the Lord Ruler. He found Vin at the front, sitting on the steps of Keep Venture, huddled and slumped over. Elland was nowhere to be seen, though Ham stood nearby, arms folded. In the courtyard, somebody waved their hands before the group, giving a speech. Was that Demu, leading the people in the funeral service? Those were certainly corpses laid out in the courtyard, their souls no longer shining. He couldn't hear what Demu was saying, but the presentation seemed clear. Kelsier settled down on the steps beside Vin. He clasped his hands before himself. So, that went well? Vin, of course, didn't reply.
I mean, Kelsier continued, yes, we ended up releasing a world-ending force of destruction and chaos, but at least the Lord Ruler is dead. Mission accomplished. Plus, you still have your nobleman boyfriend, so there's that. Don't worry about the scar on his stomach. It'll make him look more rugged. Mists know the little bookworker could use some toughening up. She didn't move, but maintained her slumped posture. He rested his arm across her shoulders and was given a glimpse of her as she looked in the real world. Full of color and life, yet somehow weathered. She seemed so much older now, no longer the child he'd found scamming obligators on the streets. He leaned down beside her. I'm going to beat this thing, Vin. I am going to take care of this.
And how,
Preservation said from the courtyard below the steps, are you going to accomplish that? Kelsier looked up. Though he was prepared for the sight of Preservation, he still winced to see him as he was, barely even in human shape any longer, more dissolved bunch of weaving threads of frayed smoke, giving the vague impression of a head, arms, legs.
He's free, Preservation said. That's it. Time up. Contract due. He will take what was promised.
We'll stop him.
Stop him? He's the force of entropy, a universal constant. You can't stop that any more than you can stop time.
Kelsier stood up, leaving Vin and walking down the steps toward Preservation. He wished he could hear what Damu was saying to this small crowd of glowing souls.
If he can't be stopped, Kelsier said, then we'll slow him. You did it before, right? Your grand plan?
Preservation said. Yes, there was a plan.
I'm free now. I can help you put it into motion.
Free?
Preservation laughed.
No, you've just entered a larger prison. Tied to this realm, bound to it. There's nothing you can do. Nothing I can do.
That
he's watching us, you know,
Preservation said, looking upward at the sky. Kelsier followed his gaze reluctantly. The sky, misty and shifting, seemed so distant. It felt as if it had pulled back from the planet, like people in a crowd shying away from a corpse. In that vastness, Kelsier saw something dark, thrashing, writhing upon itself, more solid than mist, like an ocean of snakes obscuring the tiny sun. He knew that vastness. Ruin was indeed watching.
He thinks you're insignificant, Preservation said. I think he finds you amusing. The soul of Eti that is still in there somewhere would laugh at this.
He has a soul?
Preservation didn't respond. Kelsier stepped up to him, passing corpses made of mists on the ground. If he is alive, Kelsier said, then he can be killed, no matter how powerful.
You're proof of that, Fuzz. He's killing you.
Preservation laughed, a harsh, barking noise.
You keep forgetting which of us is a god, and which is just a poor dead shadow, waiting to expire.
He waved a mostly unraveled arm, fingers made of spirals of unwound misty strings.
Listen to them. Doesn't it embarrass you how they talk? The survivor? Ha! I preserved them for millennia. What have you done for them?
Kelsier turned toward Damu. Preservation appeared to have forgotten that Kelsier couldn't hear the speech. Intending to go touch Damu to get a view of what he looked like now, Kelsier brushed one of the corpses on the ground. A young man, a soldier by the looks of it. He didn't know the boy, but he started to worry. He looked back at where Ham was standing. That figure near him would be Breeze. What of the others? He grew cold, then started touching corpses, looking for any he recognized. His motions became more frantic.
What are you seeking?
Preservation asked.
How many? Kelsier swallowed. How many of these were friends of mine?
Some,
Preservation said. Any members of the crew?
No,
Preservation said, and Kelsier let out a sigh.
No, they died during the initial break-in, days ago. Dachshund. Clubs.
A spear of ice shot through Kelsier. He tried to stand up from beside the corpse he'd been inspecting, but stumbled, trying to force out the words.
No. No, not Dachs.
Preservation nodded.
What? When did it happen? How?
Preservation laughed, the sound of madness. He showed little of the kindly, uncertain man who had greeted Kelsier when he'd first entered this place.
Both were murdered by Kolos as the siege broke. Their bodies were burned days ago, Kelsier, while you were trapped.
Kelsier trembled, feeling lost. Kelsier said.
Dachs. I wasn't here for him. I could have seen him again as he passed. Talked to him. Saved him, maybe?
He cursed you as he died, Kelsier, Preservation said, voice harsh. He blamed you for all this.
Kelsier bowed his head. Another lost friend. And Clubs, too? Two good men. He'd lost too many of those in his life, damn it. Far too many.
I'm sorry, Dachs, Clubs. I'm sorry for failing you.
Kelsier took that anger, that bitterness and shame, and channeled it. He'd found purpose again during his days in prison. He wouldn't lose it now. He stood and turned to Preservation. The god, shockingly, cringed as if frightened. Kelsier seized the god's form, and in a brief moment was given a vision of the grandness beyond. That pervading light of Preservation that permeated all things. The world, the mists, the metals, the very souls of men. This creature was somehow dying, but his power was far from gone. He also felt Preservation's pain. It was the loss Kelsier had felt at Dox's death only magnified thousands of times over. Preservation felt every light that went out. Felt them and knew them as a person he had loved. Around the world they were dying at an accelerated pace. Too much ash was falling, and Preservation only anticipated it increasing. Armies of Kolos rampaging beyond control. Death, destruction, a world on its last legs. And to the south? What was that? People? Kelsier held Preservation, in awe at this creature's divine agony. Then Kelsier pulled him close into an embrace.
I'm so sorry, Kelsier whispered.
Oh, Senna,
Preservation whispered.
I'm losing this place. Losing them all.
We are going to stop it, Kelsier said, pulling back.
It can't be stopped. The deal...
Deals can be broken.
Not these kinds of deals, Kelsier. I was able to trick Ruin before, lock him away by fooling him with our agreement. But that wasn't a breach of contract, more leaving a hole in the agreement to be exploited. This time there are no holes.
Then we go out kicking and screaming, Kelsier said. You and me were a team.
Preservation seemed to condense, his form pulling itself together, threads reweaving.
A team? Yes, a crew.
To do the impossible.
Defy reality,
Preservation whispered.
Everyone always said you were insane.
And I always acknowledged that they had a point, Kelsier said. Thing is, while they were correct to question my sanity, they never did have the right reasoning. It's not my ambition that should worry them.
Then what should?
Kelsier smiled. Preservation, in turn, laughed, a sound that had lost its edge, the harshness gone.
I can't help you do whatever it is you think you're doing. Not directly. I don't think well enough anymore. But...
But?
Preservation solidified a little further.
But I know where you'll find someone who can.
2.
Kelsier followed a thread of preservation, like a glowing tendril of mist, through the city. He made sure to look up periodically, confronting that force in the sky which had boiled through the mists there and was coming to dominate in every direction. Kelsier would not back down. He would not let this thing intimidate him again. He'd already killed one god. The second murder was always easier than the first. The tendril of preservation led him past shadowy tenements, through a slum that somehow looked even more depressing on this side, all crammed together, the souls of men packed in frightened lumps. His crew had saved this city, but many of the people Kelsier passed didn't seem to know it yet. Eventually, the tendril led him out broken city gates to the north, past rubble and corpses being slowly sorted. Past living armies and that fearsome army of Kolos, out beyond the city, and a short hike along the river to the lake? Luthadel was built not far from the lake that bore its name, though most of the city's populace determinedly ignored that fact. Lake Luthadel wasn't the swimming or sport kind of lake, unless you fancied bathing in a soupy sludge that was more ash than it was water. And good luck catching what few fish remained after centuries of residing next to a city full of half-starved ska. This close to the ash mounts, keeping the river and lake navigable, had demanded the full-time attention of an entire class of people, the canal workers. A strange breed of ska who rarely mixed with those from the city proper. They would have been horrified to find that here on this side, the lake, and actually the river as well, was inverted somehow. Opposite to the way the mists under his feet had a liquid feel to them, the lake rose into a solid mound, only a few inches high, but harder and somehow more substantial than the ground he'd become used to walking upon. In fact, the lake was like a low island, rising from the sea of mists. What was solid and what was fluid seemed somehow reversed in this place. Kelsier stepped up to the island's edge, the ribbon of preservation's essence curling past him and leading onto the island, like a mythical string showing the way home from the grand maze of Ishathon. Kelsier stuffed his hands in his trouser pockets and kicked at the ground of the island. It was some type of dark, smoky stone. "What?" Preservation whispered. Kelsier jumped, then glanced at the line of light. "You? In there, Fuzz?"
"I'm everywhere," Preservation said, his voice soft, frail. He sounded exhausted. "Why have you stopped?"
"This is different."
"Yes, it congeals here," Preservation said. "It has to do with the way men think and where they are likely to pass. Somewhat to do with that, at least."
"But what is it?" Kelsier said, stepping up onto the island. Preservation said nothing further, and so Kelsier continued toward the center of the island. Whatever had congealed here, it was strikingly stone-like. And things grew on it. Kelsier passed scrubby plants sprouting from the otherwise hard ground, not misty, inchoate plants, but real ones, full of color. They had broad, brown leaves with, curiously, what seemed like mist rising from them. None of the plants reached higher than his knees, but there was still far more than he'd expected to find here. As he passed through a field of the plants, he thought he caught something scurrying between them, rustling leaves in its passing. "The world of the dead has plants and animals," he thought. But that wasn't what Preservation had called it. The cognitive realm. How did these plants grow here? What watered them? The farther he penetrated onto this island, the darker it became. Ruin was covering up that tiny sun, and Kelsier began to miss even the faint glow that had permeated the phantom mists in the city. Soon he was traveling in what seemed like twilight. Eventually, Preservation's ribbon grew thin, then vanished. Kelsier stopped near its tip, whispering, "Buzz, you there?" No response, the silence refuting Preservation's claim earlier that he was everywhere. Kelsier shook his head. Perhaps preservation was listening, but wasn't there enough to give a reply. Kelsier continued forward, passing through a place where the plants had grown to waist height, mist rising from their broad leaves like steam from a hot plate. Finally, ahead, he spotted light. Kelsier pulled up. He'd fallen into a prowl, naturally, led by instincts gained from a life spent on the con, literally since the day of his birth. He had no weapons. He knelt, feeling at the ground for a stone or stick, but these plants weren't big enough to provide anything substantial, and the ground was smooth, unbroken. Preservation had promised him help, but he wasn't sure how much he trusted what Preservation said. Odd that living through his own death should make him more hesitant to trust in God's word. He took off his belt for a weapon, but it evaporated in his hands and appeared back on his waist. Shaking his head, he prowled closer, approaching near enough to the fire to pick out two people. Alive, and in this realm, not glowing souls or misty spirits. The man wore ska clothing, suspenders, shirt with sleeves rolled up, and tended a small dinner fire. He had short hair and a narrow, almost pinched face. That knife at his belt, nearly long enough to be a sword, would come in very handy. The other person, who sat on a small folding chair, might have been Terrace. There were some among their population who had a skin tone almost as dark as hers, though he'd also met some people from the various southern dominances who were dark. She certainly wasn't wearing Terrace clothing. She had on a sturdy brown dress with a large leather girdle around the waist and wore her hair woven into tiny braids. Two. He could handle two, couldn't he? Even without allomancy or weapons. Regardless, best to be careful. He hadn't forgotten his humiliation at the hands of the Drifter. Kelsier made a careful decision, then stood up, straightened his coat, and strode into their camp. "Well," he proclaimed, "this has been an unusual few days, I can tell you that." The man at the fire scrambled backward, hand on his knife, gaping. The woman remained seated, though she reached for something at her side. A little tube with a handle on the bottom. She pointed it toward him, treating it like some kind of weapon. "So," Kelsier said, glancing at the sky with its shifting, writhing mass of two solid tendrils, "anyone else bothered by the voracious force of destruction in the air above us?"
"Shadows!" the man shouted. "It's you! You're dead!"
"Depends on your definition of dead," Kelsier said, strolling over to the fire. The woman trailed him with that odd weapon of hers. "What in the blazes are you burning for that fire?" He looked up at the two of them. "What?"
"How?" the man sputtered. "What? When?"
"Why?" Kelsier added helpfully.
"Yes, why?"
"I have a very delicate constitution, you see," Kelsier said, "and death seemed like it would be rather bad for the digestion, so I decided not to participate."
"One doesn't merely decide to become a shadow," the man exclaimed.
He had a faintly strange accent, one Kelsier couldn't place.
"It's an important rite, with requirements and traditions. This is..."
He threw his hands into the air.
"This is a bother."
Kelsier smiled, meeting the gaze of the woman, who reached for a cup of something warm on the ground beside her. With her other hand, she tucked her weapon away, as if it had never been there. She was perhaps in her mid-30s.
"The survivor of Hathsin," she said, musing.
"You seem to have me at a disadvantage," Kelsier said. "One problem with notoriety, unfortunately."
"I should assume there are many disadvantages to fame for a thief. One doesn't particularly wish to be recognized while trying to lift pocketbooks."
"Considering how he's regarded by the people of this domain," the man said, still watching Kelsier with a wary eye, "I'd expect them to be delighted to discover him robbing them."
"Yes," Kelsier said dryly. "They practically lined up for the privilege."
"Must I repeat myself?"
She considered.
My name is Chris of Taldane.
She nodded toward the other man, and he reluctantly replaced his knife.
That is Naj, a man in my employ.
Excellent, Kelsier said. Any idea why Preservation would tell me to come talk to you?
Preservation?
Naj said, stepping up and seizing Kelsier's arm. So, as with the Drifter, they could indeed touch Kelsier.
You've spoken directly with one of the Shards?
Sure, Kelsier said. Buzz and I go way back. He pulled his arm free of Naj's grip and grabbed the other folding stool from beside the fire. Two simple pieces of wood that folded together, a piece of cloth between them to sit on. He settled it across from Chris and sat down.
I don't like this, Chris, Naj said. He's dangerous.
Fortunately, she replied, so are we.